Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, sky watching Jupiter near the moon, challenges to healthy coral reefs, and the science and music of Okote soul sounds. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Something in their body is hot enough to start moving, just like if you look at a liquid. It has to be hot before it really starts moving around.
That was musician Martin Perna of Okote Soul Sounds. More with him later, but first, Science News of the Week with Deborah Bird and Michael Brennan.
In a November 22nd article in the online journal PLOS Biology, researchers asked why the gene for synesthesia survives among humans. Individuals with synesthesia associate numbers with colors or flavors with certain shapes. The researchers say that synesthesia is 7 times more common in artists, poets, and novelists than the rest of the population. They suggest the gene might have survived to let some individuals link seemingly unrelated ideas, like numbers with colors, as part of their overall creativity.
UC Berkeley researchers have found out that it's true. It will all seem better in the morning. They found that during the dream phase of sleep, also known as REM sleep, our stress chemistry shuts down. The findings, published on November 23rd in the journal Current Biology, offer a compelling explanation for why we dream.
Using CT imaging and advanced manufacturing techniques, experts have created a reproduction of a 1704 Stradivarius violin. Radiologists in Minnesota worked with professional violin makers over the course of 2 years, culling data from over 1,000 scans of the original violin. They explained how they did it on November 28th at the annual meeting of the Radiological Society of North America.
Gestures like pointing and holding up objects had been observed only in humans and great apes, but new evidence says that ravens also gesture to communicate. A team of European researchers investigated the non-vocal behavior of members of a wild raven community in Austria. They observed that ravens use their beaks in a similar way to the way we use our hands to show and offer objects such as moss, stones, and twigs. This, according to a study that appeared in the journal Nature Communications on November 29th.
NASA called an official end to its NanoSail-D mission on November 29th. NanoSail-D, a satellite, re-entered Earth's atmosphere on September 17th. This was after carrying NASA's first ever solar sail in low Earth orbit for 240 days. Researchers say the re-entry of the satellite was controlled. It burned up when it entered Earth's atmosphere. They say solar sail technology could pave the way for safe re-entry of decommissioned satellites and space debris in the future. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
Artist and educator Martin Perna lives in Austin, Texas, and he founded the musical groups Antibellus and Okote Soul Sounds, whose music is featured on Earth Sky 22. Martin Perna joins us now in the studio to talk about the intersection of science and music in his art. Martin, welcome.
Thank you.
So tell us about Okote Soul Sounds, the musical group you founded. If it were a science experiment, what would it be investigating?
It would investigate the effect of certain rhythms and melodies and harmonies on the boiling point of a dance floor. So I've been a professional musician since 1996 with a few different groups, a group called Antibalas that I formed in 1998, and also with a group called Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings that I was one of the founding members of and played for 6 years. And we've played all over the world, from both sides of the African continent to Japan to Australia, New Zealand. And it's always fascinating to see how music affects people. Sometimes right out of the gate, people start dancing. And That means that there's something, you know, there's something in their body is hot enough to start moving. Just like if you look at a liquid, it has to be hot before it really starts moving around. And then in some other places, we might be playing for 90 minutes. And at the end of the show, people are barely starting to warm up. For instance, we played a show in Leuven in Belgium. And for the first 80 minutes of the show, it was like their feet were glued to the floor. And then the last 20 minutes, they went into a frenzy. And after the performance, the promoter took me out. We had a nice Belgian beer. And I was asking him, I said, what's up with the audience? And he said, oh, they need about 6 to 8 beers. And these are about 22-ounce pints of 7.3% extremely strong Belgian beer. They need about 6 to 8 beers before they really start to get into the music. So just thinking about certain places where people from the downbeat are moving to other places in the world where it takes quite a bit more, even just to kind of move, convert the audience from a block of ice into, you know, a puddle of lukewarm water. And that's the work that we do. So certain times it's about the music, other times it's about the actual physical space. It's about the audience. It's about all those different factors. So in many ways, you know, it is really scientific. And over the years, just seeing how different, how the audiences respond to different stimuli. Also, all the music that we play is rooted in tropic and subtropical areas. And so just sound, the air is a medium for the music. It's music that was originated and meant to be played and carried through warm air. So if, say, I'm with Antibalas or Ocote Soul Sounds and we're playing some festival in Vermont in late August where the temperature drops down to 53 degrees, a lot of things happen. The audience, their bodies are colder, so they're moving less. The air as a medium isn't carrying the sound as it's supposed to, and our instruments themselves, for instance, the saxophones, when they get cold, or all the brass instruments, rather, when they get colder, the pitch goes down. And so we spend most of when we play these outdoor festivals, we spend a lot of the concert constantly adjusting and readjusting our instruments to be in tune with the rest of the band. And then on the other side of the stage, the string instruments go sharp. So we're all, rather than just being able to relax and find the groove when it's colder weather out, which is not ever how our music was meant to be presented, we spent a lot of the show just trying to find that center point of proper intonation due to these environmental factors. And it makes it that much harder to heat up the audience. So yeah, there's a lot of science involved with it. And over the years, as I try to get deeper into the practice, things that I'm a little bit more cognizant about.
I love this analogy of people and their personal boiling points. And in thinking about how you do this with your group, I understand that you have like a miniature orchestra almost that you bring with you. I want to talk about some of the things that you're doing now. Ocote Soul Sounds tours the West Coast the week of December 7th, 2011. Where I imagine people can hear music from the new album, Taurus. Mm-hmm. You know? What are you looking forward to on this road trip from your hometown of Austin?
Well, Taurus came out a few months back in June, and this is the first heavy touring that we're doing. And a lot of it is just to see how people, you know, what the boiling points are in each of these cities, and if we'll be able to go back and have some sort of relationship with them over the years as far as playing our music there, or if it's just sort of like it's an ice cavern there, we're not going back, because that happens some places. It just there's always individuals in different cities where the music really resonates, so we'll see. But I'm optimistic because just we've had a great amount of support from public radio stations and all through the Southwest, the West Coast, and the Rockies, with great and devoted listener audiences that are definitely more engaged than the average commercial radio station, someone flipping around on the dial. So, yeah, there's a lot of things in our favor. We have a lot of friends and family throughout all those cities. So we're really looking forward to it and measuring people's boiling points, trying to get them heated up.
Well, today's featured song is Agua Santa. Holy water, translated. Tell us a little bit about this song. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, it begins with the concept that all water is holy. in the sense that the earth is over three quarters water. Our body is comprised mostly of water, and yet it's something that we take for granted. You know, we'll take drinking water and let the faucets run. We'll wash our car with it. We'll water our lawn at the hottest point of the day. We recycle very little of it. We turn up our noses at all this water-saving technology that has been created all over the world. And we've been experiencing a crazy, frightening drought here in Austin. So with all that in mind, I just wanted to write a song that wasn't preachy per se, but just honors water and honors the sanctity of water, and trying to push forward the idea that all water is holy. You know, all water that's clean and can nourish us and sustain us is inherently blessed. You know, it's inherently blessed with that life-giving potential. And so that's what this song is about.
Agua Santa, a song by Akote Soul Sounds. Our thanks to musician Martin Perna. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Deborah Bird joins us to talk about the global night sky and a treat for sky watchers, the planet Jupiter. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Jorge. Yes, the planet Jupiter. The planet Jupiter is the fifth planet outward from the sun. And so Earth passes between Jupiter and the sun once each year as we take our year to go around the sun. And that happened last in late October. So we're pretty close to Jupiter still right now. The planet is bright in our sky. It's in a really good place to see. And the moon is going to be passing near Jupiter in early December.
So that'll be easy to find Jupiter. Just look for the moon.
That's right. And when the moon passes near Jupiter, It takes several days to go past this very bright planet in our sky. And so the planet is really noticeable for several days as the moon sweeps past it.
So what are those dates that people can see planet Jupiter?
Well, around December 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, right around in there, if you look up at the night sky and you see a really bright object near the moon, that will be the planet Jupiter.
And I think it's just amazing to actually be able to see this world out there so easily. What are your thoughts?
Well, the coolest thing about Jupiter is that you can go into your house and grab your ordinary pair of binoculars that you may have lying around for bird watching or sports or whatever, and turn them up to look at the planet Jupiter, and you might catch a glimpse of one or two of Jupiter's four largest moons, the Galilean satellites. And those moons, you know, move in orbit around Jupiter in such a way that we can see them shift positions from night to night. So it's a very fascinating thing to watch.
And can anybody in the world see planet Jupiter near the moon in coming up right around now?
Absolutely. Anybody can see the planet Jupiter near the moon on December 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, around those dates. It'll be the brightest object near the moon.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science.
Sponges don't build the reef. They may persist for long periods of time, but they don't lay down the calcium carbonate skeleton, the limestone skeleton.
You're listening to Joseph Pollack, a biologist at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. In early November of 2011, Pollack published a study in the scientific journal Bioscience that summarized nearly 20 years of research on coral reefs in the Caribbean Sea. He found that a combination of factors, global warming, pollution, disease, and overfishing, are changing the balance of life on the reefs. Throughout the waters of the Caribbean, he said, organisms called sponges are beginning to crowd out corals, which could lead to the reef's eventual breakdown. He talked more about it with Earth Sky's Beth Lebwohl.
Your newest paper in Bioscience summarizes 20 years of research on coral reefs in the Caribbean. What's the most important thing you want people to know about what's changed there?
Caribbean coral reefs have changed dramatically over the last 40 years, and the populations of corals have plummeted. So there is now very low cover of corals, hard corals, that is reef-building corals on the reefs in the Caribbean. And that's freed up space for other organisms, macroalgae, soft corals, and the organisms that I study, which are sponges.
And so what's causing that?
The presence of diseases that have been passed around, primarily probably by humans moving water around from one ocean to another. But that combined with climate change, so increased temperatures in the Caribbean, which is a problem for corals because they tend to live right at the thermal maximum, essentially the highest temperature that they can survive at during the summer is where they're living. So if those temperatures go beyond that, it causes them to bleach and ultimately to die.
And what does that mean for the reefs? Because it's not exactly clear to me. Like, sponges are taking over. Is that good, bad?
Well, it depends on who you're talking about. So the overall system, the conceptual model for the ecosystem is that fish-eating fishes eat sponge-eating fishes. The sponge-eating fishes eat sponges, and the sponges interact with all the other organisms that are found on the reef. So if you are overfishing the fishes that eat the sponges, it results in a situation where the sponges outcompete corals and macroalgae and other organisms on the reef. The net effect is that if they take over the reef, even though they're long-lived, they don't build the reef. The corals build the reef. So over time, the reefs will degrade because there's nothing actively building limestone up to form the reef. The sponges, they're large, they're massive, they provide habitat, but they don't secrete calcium carbonate. So they ultimately are not reef formers. combined with sea level increases, we're talking about a loss of the reefs that essentially protect shorelines. These are among the most biodiverse habitats in the world. They're equivalent to tropical rainforests in terms of the species diversity that are found on the reefs. And all of the value that's placed on biodiversity in terrestrial systems is true for coral reefs as well. They could potentially be the source of new medicines. And if you cause the extinction of those organisms, essentially hundreds of millions of years of evolution that have resulted in the synthesis of those metabolites is destroyed.
You've been listening to marine biologist Joseph Pollack. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. And special thanks this week to our musical contributors, The Black and White Years, 100 Flowers, Mother Falcon, Sleep Good, and Okote Soul Sounds. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much hype, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt you. What you don't know won't end it there.